is July 27th, 2020. It is a Monday, and it is that time once again for No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, and Denny McClain. And, boy, baseball season is underway, or is it underway? Partially so. The story today as we open up on Monday is that the Marlins have already canceled their opener. This is it shocking news? I don't think it's shocking news. I don't think anything that happens related to COVID and sports at this point is shocking news. But the fact that the opener is canceled after 5 months of even getting ready to have an opener, however months it is, it's a little disconcerting and a bit of an ominous shadow over baseball. Thoughts, anyone?
This is a great demonstration of selfishness on behalf of the players. The guy who started this, originated the virus, and then started to pass it along to everybody else. Why can't they follow the rules? You know, like I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, what the hell is wrong with a mask? So anyway, somebody picks it up. Somebody spreads it through the clubhouse. My question today is, are you going to be the next team that goes into the clubhouse where the Marlins just were? I doubt it. So now we're looking probably an extended period of time, maybe a week, 10 days, before anybody goes back into that clubhouse.
I want to read something that a college student wrote over the weekend that pertains to my feelings and reflects them as well. You guys all saw, everybody knows, that Michigan State placed all of its football players into quarantine or self-isolation for 14 days after a member of the team and a second staff member tested positive. So here is Michigan State's starting offensive tackle, Jordan Reed, who tweeted, "Guys are testing positive across the country, left and right. Why is there still discussion on a season? Why is it taking so long to make a logical decision? Let me guess. Revenue?" And I've been saying this all along, too. Either you're in or you're out, okay? Either you're extremely concerned about this COVID thing, so why play a season? Or you're going to say, you know what? One of these young athletes is probably going to die, so let's go ahead and do this. But it's just utterly ridiculous what's going on. It's either do the seasons, play the games, or just say, no, it's not time. See you in 2021.
Do you think it's really that simple, though? Okay, let's say 14 Marlins are now tested positive. That puts other people in danger. That puts other teams in danger. And I know you feel that young people can't die, but it's interestingly enough, I want to bring up two things I saw last night on HBO Real Sports. Number one, Chris Hinton of the NFL. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, the former offensive lineman. Yeah.
And his son plays for Michigan. He said a player will die. Now, he may be right. He may be wrong, but they're very concerned that the players are brought back June 1st and that they have no voice in all this. And so there is great concern that if 14 Marlins are test positive, there could be some very dangerous ramifications. What you're saying, Bob, is either play or not play. So if you're saying either play, then okay, if we're all positive, we'll just play and we'll see what happens. But I don't think it's that simple, isn't it? By the way, last night on Real Sports, they had Peter King to talk about football. They had Tom Verducci. They had Tom Verducci to talk about baseball. And they had David Aldridge. Verducci said 50-50 that baseball makes it through the season. Peter King said, "I don't think so. He feels it's maybe a 40% chance football does." And Aldridge said he thinks 80% because the NBA bubble is much more airtight, let's say, than players traveling all over the country the way they will be in football and baseball. So, but to see it happen this quickly is still a bit of a shock.
Well, the Tiger thing seems, the Tigers winning 2 out of 3 games seems so crazy right now. It doesn't really matter. For one reason, everybody's in jeopardy. There isn't anybody walking around the earth today right now that's not in jeopardy in one form or another. All you got to do is be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You're not even going to know when it hits you. But yeah. But I don't know how you protect this. Maybe Bob is right. This would be the first time in many, many years, by the way, Bob is right about anything. But he could be right about this, that maybe they need to shut it down. I mean, you know, I predicted the NBA wasn't going to or the NFL wasn't going to play this year. I don't know. But I am just shocked that the players do not take better care of their environment, stay out of the places they're not supposed to be and follow the rules. This is just a blatant case of not being responsible. You've got, you know, and the problem is, and we talked about this before, everybody's in jeopardy, your families, and now you're taking something home, and that family's taking something home, and that family's taking something home. The kids and the wives and every and innocent victims. I mean, you know, maybe everybody's an innocent victim here, but when guys are going to gentlemen's clubs to get just something to eat, you begin to really redefine the word eat, don't you?
Well, you know, wait a second, Bob. You go back to what you're saying, all or nothing. So you're saying you now, what's the all part?
What are you doing, a Frank Sinatra imitation today? All or nothing at all? Is that what you're trying to do?
Well, he didn't do that originally. He covered that. That was years before him. But my question is, so what are you saying? Go, if you're going to decide to go push forward, go ahead, come hell or high water, or cancel it. I mean,
okay, here's what I'm saying. These guys, all four sports, must have sat down when they're discussing all this ad infinitum before the season started. And somebody said, okay, fellas, what if? What if 10 guys test positive for the Detroit Tigers in the first 2 weeks of the season? What are we going to do then? And if the overwhelming majority of opinion was, well, they'll have to shut down. Then don't play the season. Don't play the season. But Denny, I'll tell you one thing I was definitely wrong about. I actually enjoyed watching the games over the weekend. Starting with the Mets, my second favorite team in all of Major League Baseball. Great to hear the announcers. And the funny thing about it is, when you're watching these games, and I saw all three Tigers games. When you're watching these games, first of all, you're listening to the announcers as much as you can stand in some cases. And you're obviously watching the action on the field. So the background piped in phony baloney crowd noise is just, you know, white noise.
Is it coming from the stadium or is it coming from the TV crew?
But the thing about
truck in the stadium.
But you don't think about it. It sounds like a regular baseball game. So you forget it's there until at some point you remind yourself, well, that's fake crowd noise. And the pounding of the tom-toms for a rally late in the game. And the way they bring the crowd noise up, you know, when somebody gets a base hit or when it's a 3-2 pitch with two out of the bases loaded. It's phony.
But yet, here's my question. Are our announcers in Cincinnati yesterday, were they there?
They were
at home, right?
No. I think Morris and Shep were in Cincinnati. I believe they were.
I don't think so.
Think everybody was at home.
Anyway, yeah. It certainly didn't stop Shep from being in. By the way, I love Shep. He's my neighbor. We live on the same street here in Bloomfield. We walk our dogs each other. So I love Shep. But listen to his home run call from when Jacoby Jones hit one in the ninth inning the other night to power the Tigers to victory. Listen to this.
Here's the 2-2. Launch to left center.
Did he get enough? He did.
Gone! Jacoby Jones wears a crown off the Cincinnati closer. A two-run blast, and the Tigers surge back in front. Who needs bunting when you got that kind of power?
Yeah, he had tried to bunt him over and missed a couple times. But that's exciting, isn't it? Go ahead.
Well, let me talk about that, Eli, because I was watching that game. He tried to bunt him over, and he failed. So Jacoby turns to bunt, okay? This is a 1-1 game. It's the ninth inning. The leadoff man is on. Nobody out. So, of course, Jacoby tries to bunt. So, anyway, Shep says to Jack Morris at that point, you like this strategy, Jack? I almost jump out of my chair. Do I like it? This is what baseball's about. Morris says, what strategy? He actually didn't know what he was talking about. And then Shep
Wait a minute. He knew he meant the strategy is to bunt the guy over and score a run. He knows.
But Jack didn't know what strategy Matt was talking about. I'm telling you, that was his reaction on the wear. Because you like the strategy? And so Jack says, oh, well, that's old school baseball. And he says, oh, well, if you got a guy who can bunt, I mean, you know, I don't know what this guy's thinking. He's talking on the air on the Tigers game on Saturday about pitches on the black.
Yeah,
the black doesn't exist anymore. And then Jack tries to explain it to
us. It doesn't.
One and a half inch black rubber that went around home plate. I haven't seen that in years.
Well, that's a good point.
It's just a white plate. It's only a term now. The pitch was on the black. So, I mean, some of this stuff, man, you know, I didn't have to see them on Friday night. I watched the ESPN broadcast. I was so pissed at the Tigers announcing Saturday. I watched the Reds broadcast on Sunday. Even worse, this guy, Tom Brenneman, better thank his lucky stars for his last name, clueless. This guy's just awful. So, you know, improvements can be made in the broadcast. Let's put it that
way. Well, I think so, what Jack meant was that if you have a guy that can bunt, you have a bunt. But maybe Jacoby Jones can't bunt, and they're asking him to bunt is what he meant.
Did you watch this? Jacoby. Jack paused when Matt asked him if he liked the strategy. He paused.
Jacoby Jones can't hit. What do you expect him to do? Now learn how to bunt? I mean, come on, guys. Listen, the guy's a long way from being the major leaguer that everybody thinks he's going to be. He needs to learn how to hit a breaking ball. That's what he needs to do. And with Mr. Kaline gone, who was the best hitter I ever saw in a breaking ball, I think it's going to be a longer time. But as far as home plate goes, since I'm the only guy that actually pitched the one, all the ball's got to do is touch any part of the plate.
Yes.
Strike.
Yes.
The problem with umpires is they miss that pitch. They miss it more than 50, 60% of the time.
Especially wearing an inside chest protector, Danny.
The middle of the plate, the opposite side of the plate, those are all strikes. But for some reason, they miss that pitch an awful lot. And, you know, the more they talk about this technology, as they have for tennis, you know, I'm beginning to think that that may be the way to go.
Well, by the way, I told you that since we started doing this show and you poo-pooed it. The problem, you're the pitcher. I was the umpire. The problem is when they decided
you weren't an umpire at the right level. You
were
a major league umpire.
Be quiet.
It's a whole
so anyway,
world.
May I say this, please?
Bob, I promise you, it's an entire different world at the
Yes, Danny.
Level,
yes.
And it is
now, Danny.
Out there
right.
Throwing
Matt,
hey, Bob. Did you manage to umpire in the Quebec League? I love the Cameron stories about the Quebec League.
That was great.
I tell you, and when the stories about South Dakota umpiring were just terrific. I was spellbound when I listened to that show.
Right. So let me teach the great Danny McLean something about umpiring now.
When Major League Baseball
decided for whatever reason to make umpiring uniform, they forced every umpire in baseball to go to the inside chest protector. American leaguers during your career, Jenny, only wore outside chest protectors.
Yes.
When you're wearing an outside chest protector, the problem is you don't get a good view of the low pitch, but you see both corners perfectly, and you see the high strike. You go to that inside chest protector, and you are just guessing on any ball near the outside part of the plate. That's why you see so many umpires missing that pitch. They can't see it properly. So, yes, Denny, you finally come around to my way of thinking. We're going to have computerized umpire in Major League Baseball probably within the next 5 years.
Bob, what you've identified are a lot of pitchers with horrible control that can't hit an outside corner. That's what you just identified. As far as the umpires go, listen, if an umpire, and we were on these umpires pretty good from time to time. We'd go up there to hit at that time because we were also hitting. Go up there and say, listen, you know, you missed the last one. Could you put your ass down a little bit closer to the ground? I'm going to try to throw some curveballs next inning. And you'd give the guy a little warning. You'd tell him, hey, I got some sliders coming for you next inning. And these guys really were into the game, and most of them weren't, by the way.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Now you're questioning the integrity of Major League Baseball
umpires.
I'm
not questioning their integrity. I'm talking about the idea of having a lot of energy for a game every night. It's human nature to kind of skid if you can.
And if I can go back to a previous topic, since there aren't any fans in the ballpark, then this is why Matt Shepard has to make up for the lack of fans by being one of the booth. Here's who responded when C.J. Crone hit the game-winning homer in the ninth inning on Sunday night. Listen up.
He doesn't have to do that now. He got a leadoff man on, but move him over to second base.
Goes the other way.
Did he get
deep to right? Get going! Gone! How about that?
And the Tigers win the World Series!
And CJ Crone has surged the Tigers back in front.
It almost sounds like he's rubbing it in Jack's face a little bit, isn't it?
But
Doesn't it sound a little bit like that?
You know what, guys? This is a Detroit-based show, so of course you're going to play that broadcast. But again, I watched the Cincinnati broadcast on Sunday. And Brenema says, long.
I know.
Uh-oh.
I saw
Looks
that.
Looks like
yeah.
it could be.
Yeah, oh boy.
Two-run homer by Crone. The Tigers take the lead. They're all homers. Well, they're all disgraceful.
Cheerleaders. I have a question because I listened to the last show, painful though it was, and you guys were talking about, I didn't really get it. You were talking about the pitching, and you both were advocating to let the young guys come up. You wanted to Mize and Scooble, whatever. So my question was, I didn't get it. Are you saying bring them up because they're better than the pitchers that we have? Yes. Or are you saying bring them up to create fan interest? But you really can't believe that they're better than Fulmer, and they're better than Boyd, and they're better than Nova, and they're better than Turnbull, because they've never pitched above double-A ball.
Oh,
so
you know
I didn't
what?
Get it. Are you saying,
I'll bet you right now that Casey Mize is better than the last two of those guys
you
mentioned.
I wouldn't bet anything on it. But let me say this to you. The reason why – listen, these kids have gotten more publicity than Babe Ruth did when he was chasing 700 home runs. Everybody wants to see these kids pitch. Let them pitch. Put them in the environment by which they may live for a very long time. Let them get out there. Let them get their brains beat out a little bit like Porcello did yesterday. And like Ohtani, the Japanese guy who didn't get anybody out in the first inning the other day.
But are you saying that they have a better chance of winning than the four established
I'm saying,
major league
no,
pitchers?
I don't care if they win. I want them to get some experience in the environment.
Sure.
Right now, they've got no fans out. They got no Bobs out there booing them every time they give up a home run.
But after a 47-114 record last year, one of the worst in baseball history, one of the top two or three worst in baseball history, they're now 2-1. And at this rate, they'll make the playoffs. Of course, they're not going to continue. But the point is, you know, that's why I'm saying, do you really want to just throw the young guys out there and let them get their brains beat
I want to
in?
See Casey Mize, Eli. I do.
Well, you want,
and people are so starved for the Detroit Tigers to be successful. They've been such a joke for what seems like so long now. Even the Detroit papers. Want three headlines from the weekend in the news and the free press? Here's first. Detroit Tigers have a feeling Saturday's win could be start of something special.
Oh, geez.
Detroit Tigers have found the recipe for winning baseball. Do the little things.
Yeah, finally, like clutch hitting, home runs.
Yeah. Finally, Fulmer Brilliant. Times two. This is a new kid. The Tigers just signed Carson Fulmer. And it's Tigers right-handers both writing epic comebacks. That was in the Detroit News. They haven't pitched an inning yet this year. And this Carson Fulmer kid, after being the eighth player taken overall in the draft, he's been a dud. He's done nothing in the big leagues, which is why the White Sox just waived him. Can we wait a little bit?
My only point about the pitching guys is that, you know, they decided on the eve of the opener to expand the playoffs to 16 teams. So,
right.
So 30 teams, 16 in the playoffs. The Marlins look like they can't not gonna play a season.
They're out
so
already.
My point is that you want to put the best guys out there rather than just satisfy your urge to see the young pitchers. I want to preview our guest coming up in a moment, and we got a lot more to talk about. First, I want to remind you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, 5 locations. They got them in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman Automotive also claims Michigan's number one pre-owned status with its 1-800 pre-owned supercenter in Waterford. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman and relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it or bring it back guarantee. The goal, of course, is to make it a can't-lose proposition. Feldman assures that with their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. In fact, at any of Feldman's 9 locations, you can get that. They include Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman Dodge Jeep and Ram of Woodhaven. So we're proud and confident you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business and at the same time support No Filter Sports. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom.
Well, I guess I passed the audition on Thursday, so I want to ask you guys, are you concerned about the environment? Better believe you are, or you should be. That being said, we encourage you to look into Power Home Solar. It's based in Detroit, and it's America's fastest growing solar energy company. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are made in America, too. With solar energy, you're going to save money, you're going to help save the environment, and also help yourself avoid those costly and infuriating power outages. It's because Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yeah, lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and PHS have financing. It starts at just $99 a month. You call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you save an additional $1,800. Support our sponsors so that they'll continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
And our guest coming up today, we had his son on a couple of months ago, Braylon Edwards, but we have the father on today, Stanley Edwards, who starred for the Wolverines at fullback. In fact, he became a fullback to accommodate two incredible runners that he played with, Butch Woolfolk and also Lawrence Ricks. And the three of them together were incredible trio. And not only did Stanley help lead Michigan to Bo's first Rose Bowl, they lost five in a row, but he's going to tell you on this show later on why his 1980 team was the best in recent Michigan history, even more so than the 97 team that won the national championship. And he'll explain why. So you're going to want to hear about from Stanley Edwards coming up a little bit later. Good guy.
Hey, Eli, one thing I do want to mention about watching all three Tigers games over the weekend, I cannot imagine watching him throw the hell out of the ball. Why Gregory Soto looked so awful last season with the Tigers, 0-5, horrendous ERA. This guy could be a big positive that could help. And the importance of winning these games so early, because it's a short season if they concluded at all. You see JV's out? That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. At least 2 to 3 weeks. Got hurt, I guess, Friday night in his opening start of the season. That could mean the Houston Astros are done. I mean, they lost Garrett Cole to the Yankees. Right. Now, Brandon's shaking his head, and he follows this stuff. Go on, Brandon.
Go ahead, Brandon. Go ahead.
That team's too stacked offensively, and they got some, despite not having Cole and Verlander, they still got some arms on there. They still got, what, Zach Greinke? He's not too bad. They also got that Josh James kid, or is it James Josh or Josh James? I can't remember his. Yep. But, Urquidy, they got a lot of great talent. That team is still going to compete for the World Series. Despite everything, despite no Verlander, that team
couldn't agree with you more. They got a good ball club from A to Z. They got a good, I mean, they're solid. They don't have many weaknesses at all. I mean, zero. I mean, so what? They lose a pitcher. They've got more.
The point is this, and I think the point is that the competitive balance is out of whack. You know, when I was a kid, we play poker. Somebody say, let's play Deuces Wild. I go, why would you play Deuces? Well, it makes it more exciting. Yeah, this is very exciting here. It's also incredibly out of balance. Look at the Marlins now. What's going to happen to their opponents coming up? What do you do about their record? It's like, this is like golf with two mulligans aside. It's a different game, not the same game. The element of luck plays into it to a much larger degree, which I guess potentially, because, you know, after all, Bob says he's watching the games now. So there's something unique and different and quirky that maybe is actually attractive.
I don't know. It's still baseball. It's still Major League Baseball. And obviously, these guys, just to say we're in Denny McClain's day, these guys are such great players. They really are. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of Denny and I, you know, talking about having Casey Mize play with the big club right now, instead they sent him to Toledo, and they sent Jake Rogers to Toledo, sent a lot of guys, which leads us all to wonder, what the hell are they doing in Toledo?
Intra-squad game.
Baseball.
That's right. Exercising intra-squad game. That's all they're doing.
So Lynn Henning wrote a piece in the Detroit News Monday morning about Tigers top prospect Parker Meadows, who should be playing in the minors. This week is at his folks' home in Georgia, 45 minutes outside of Atlanta. So two days each week he spends with his personal trainer. More often he hits against higher grade pitchers who are part of the full count baseball developmental laboratory in Georgia. Then his dad takes him over to his old high school field just to keep him tuned up on hitting, fielding, and running. Boy, that sounds like great experience, doesn't it, Poyntz?
Jeez. Well, what are they going to do? It's just another reason
I'm
going to
tell you what they're
going
to do. The Marlins caught a break. No one's going to want to play him, so everybody who comes in to play the Marlins is going to have to forfeit.
What?
So the Marlins automatically get a win. Nobody's going to want to play a guy who's got the virus.
It's going to work the other way.
They're going to have to.
Who's going to want to play?
I like to briefly go back. I said I listened to the last show, and I want to fact check a few things. That's why I asked you about Mize. I wanted you to explain what you meant about that. Bob says, Denny, you actually called for the firing of Al Avila. I don't recall you calling for the firing.
No,
what
are you talking about? I got to go back. Are you talking? What?
I said Al Avila. What I said was, and Bob mischaracterized something again,
I'm going back to the tapes, Denny.
Al Avila, I thought, should never have the general manager's job because never in his history has he been
you
a general manager or president. That's what I said. That's where he belongs, in that position. He's an assistant to somebody. But, you know, they put him in a job that he can't handle. You know, it reminds me, what a sharpness in the idea of Dom Dombrowski and Al Avila. I mean, you heard so much substance from Dombrowski. And, you know, even when Al has a little press conference over some fence that he's standing near, the bottom line is nothing ever comes of it. And now they've got the two best guys in the organization as far as exposure and publicity going on. And nobody can see him. because they don't want to pitch him. I don't understand why. Isn't that the name of the game, experience?
So he didn't exactly call for his firing, but no. you
Eli,
interpreted
it. It was over a year ago. I'll find the tapes.
A little more fact checking.
Yeah, we
mentioned
that.
This was just a slip of your tongue. You mentioned that you covered Carrie Strug when she won the pole vault, and I'm afraid she didn't win. She wasn't tracking. She'd be the shortest pole vaulter in the history of the world.
Well, if I said that, I just misspoke. But I want to say this though. Avila is, of course, under tremendous pressure, as are all GMs, to generate revenue. One more time, I want to mention the travesty I saw from the Reds announcers on TV against Detroit on Sunday. They actually came on and they told me in the third inning that if I want to, I can purchase any home run ball hit into the empty stands in Cincinnati, and I can also purchase any foul balls hit into the empty stands in Cincinnati. I just get in touch with the Reds. They gave me all the information and tell them I want to buy the home run ball that so-and-so hit.
Honest to God.
No kidding. That's a riot.
It's pathetic.
That's why ridiculous. Is that pathetic? It's a great idea. It's good marketing.
Yeah, but you don't charge. Wait a minute. They're already buying a $90 ticket to get in, for God's sake.
They're not. They're not.
It's a fan. It's a fan. You can
It's a fan. Well, how about doing something for the ticket vendors, right? No, we don't need ticket vendors.
Yeah,
it's they should give all the money from those home run balls.
I visited with a couple that the Withams that I used to live in the same block with in Bloomfield years ago. And Doug, man, he did the Tiger games as an usher for 3 years and loved it. He said, I love being at the ballpark. It's a happy place, summer night and everything. Just one example of so many of people that are out of work beyond who make baseball what it was and give us a little excitement when we're down there. A couple other things. You started off the show by saying you couldn't believe, Bob, why there were Arts Beats and Eats at the same time they had the Jazz Festival. I mean, we can't have two major events in the city. I mean, Michigan and Michigan State can't play in the same day. You can't have a jazz concert and something completely different, a food festival.
Let me ask you this.
Are we that small a city with six million people?
Let me ask you this, Eli. How many Saturdays do Michigan and Michigan State play in the fall? A lot.
I mean,
how many humongous once a year music festivals do we have in the city of Detroit?
It's a different. Okay, I don't want to get. Maybe I'm just saying it's a different. It's a different crowd.
It's not a relevant analogy.
We're big enough to have two. That's okay. Crowds. Just want to bring that up. And the other thing, Denny, do you remember being called by Channel 2 and them telling you they're going to fire me and you could do the Eli and Denny show with Ron Cameron? Because Ron said on the show the other day that they were going to fire Eli from Channel 2 so he could do the show with Denny, and neither of you fact-checked him on that. Now, I
didn't know anything about it. I shut up.
I worked there for 7 years, and I had two contracts. I had no trouble signing both contracts. So, you know, listen to what your guests say sometimes, okay? Because that's BS, and I didn't like that at all. But that's okay.
Well, let me say this to you. Somebody actually say that on our show?
Ron Cameron said they were going to fire Eli from Channel 2 so he could do the show with Denny, but then they
Ron
didn't.
Cameron did. Probably eating a hamburger at the same time he's talking.
And as I
us.
Said, I didn't say anything. I wasn't there. I was in New York. I don't know. If you're done ripping us to shreds, Eli, and that's okay. We're big boys.
Checking. That's all. Just fact checking. In fact, what was the other one?
You know what I want to talk about?
What was the other one?
No, I got you the Avila. I think that's about it. I'm good. I'm good. Okay. Continue.
Here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Damon Payne. You with me? Damon Payne?
No.
Damon Payne is the consensus number one rated defensive tackle in America. 6'4", 290, has a year left coming up in high school at Belleville, which, as all of you Southeast Michigan natives know, about a 15-minute drive from Ann Arbor.
And the relevance,
big announcement. He made a big announcement about his college decision over the weekend. Alabama.
Ooh.
How does Harbaugh lose a kid like that under his nose to Alabama? I'll tell you why. Because Alabama recruiters must have told that kid Harbaugh's not going to be there. They're not winning. They can't beat Ohio State. They'll fire Harbaugh within a year or two. You want to be involved in a program like that. I guarantee you that's what happened. And this is the worst news possible for Michigan, to miss out on a kid like that
under their noses. Yeah, well, that's bad, but I don't think you can guarantee that. But meanwhile, speaking of college football, Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, has said that with the pandemic putting everything in doubt, they may play the important games early in the season, and Michigan could play Ohio State in September, potentially. They can move the schedule up to play the important games. So,
well, they're talking Alabama and Notre Dame playing the first game of the season. that's significant.
Yeah, I thought that certainly goes off the all.
We'll wait for
the
pumpkin crowd noise on that one.
Yeah.
And Eli, this has kind of been your baby, not just as a Michigan alumnus, as a reporter. You've been pretty much all over this story about the sexual abuse at the University of Michigan by the physician, the longtime, now late team physician there. Over the weekend, I haven't seen this. Former Michigan running back John Vaughn, I know you remember him.
Absolutely.
I know everybody does who follows Michigan. John Vaughn stepped forward and identified himself as one of the guys who was abused by this doctor. Now, maybe John's smart in this case because he wants to get in on what's going to be a very big payday. But I'm a little surprised that nobody else who played at Michigan and had to deal with this creep has come forward so far.
I'm surprised others haven't. What's to say? Why not say it if you're asked? Why not? Then we're gonna talk to Stanley Edwards. Stanley Edwards is right there and right smack dab in the middle of Doc Anderson giving digital rectal exams. So we'll ask him. We'll ask Stanley if maybe it didn't apply to everybody. Listen, he couldn't have abused every student he saw. I have friends who had him as a doctor at the health service before they fired him at the health service. So he picked and chose the guys that were most attractive to him, as sick as that is.
And probably not only attractive, but weak. Weak in the ability to say no or weak not to ask the right question. You never know.
Right. So in other words, John Vaughn and now Chuck Chuck Christian.
Yeah, that's the other Michigan football player, the former tight end who had come forward recently. He was the first guy, to my knowledge. And I'll tell you something right now. I have a good relationship. I think you do too, Eli, with Rich Strenger, who is a great offensive tackle at Michigan and played with the Detroit Lions and now is a big shot attorney. Rich is a great guy. I've been trying to get him on this show for the last 2 months. We've been communicating, and I said, we're going to have to ask you about this. Are you ready to talk about it? He is not. And I think that's
not
the case with nope, he's not ready to. He doesn't want to talk about it. Now,
What would be the reasons not? I can only think of two reasons. One, because it's embarrassing. And two, because you're part of a lawsuit and you're not allowed to talk about the details before it.
That could be part of it, too. But now, as sometimes happens with us, we miss certain stories. It's not our fault. Things break Thursday or Monday afternoon after we tape a show. And so what broke late Thursday afternoon was the new team we have in the NFL called the Washington Football Team. Mm-hmm. The name has been changed for this year. Your thoughts, boys?
My thoughts are that that's kind of dry, but I know it takes a couple of years to really go through the process of just changing a team's name, logo approval, color schemes, artists, ad agencies. A lot goes into it. They've agreed to change the name. They couldn't do it right away. And rather than use another nickname or mascot, they just decided to call it that. So I don't really have a problem with that at all, because it's going to be a process. And they have already agreed to do it. They're not stalling. They're just saying they want to do it the right way. So that doesn't bother me at all.
And I think there's a little bit of stall involved. I think most of us probably would believe that. They're trying to come up with something, right on the edge. Maybe it'll take a while, but I don't see anything wrong with taking your time at this. This is a big thing. I mean, since 1935, they've been called the Redskins. This is something a lot bigger than any of us realize, especially when it comes to the money that has to be invested in all of these moves. There's a ton of things that have to be changed.
One thing that I thought was interesting is the Native American groups that really pushed for this made it a point they need to change the color scheme also. And I think, why would you change the color scheme? Yeah. The reason they want the color scheme changed, because then people, if it's the same colors, which is the red and the brown, whatever it is, then people can wear their old clothing to the game. Whereas if they make it a different color, then you can't wear your old Redskin stuff. So a lot goes into it. That's all.
Yeah, I must say this. For the last number of years, let's take, for example, although I would know who they're playing, my beloved New York Giants. If I asked somebody who the Giants got this weekend, the Skins? Or they got Washington. Yeah. That's what I would say. Yeah. I haven't, except as part of a news story on this program, I haven't used the term Redskins in a long time. So why not the Washington Skins? Just call them a Skins, for Christ's sake. I mean, really?
Yeah, I don't think that would work. But
whatever. You guys know what a Kraken is?
Yes.
K-R-A-K-E-N.
It's a team name. It's an NFL team name, isn't it?
I didn't know this either, Denny, until just late. Last week, when in a vote by the fans, the new NHL expansion franchise was named the Seattle Krakens. Now, this is a fabled Scandinavian sea monster. I guess something like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. So Seattle bypassed options like the Sockeyes. It's a fishing town, for Christ's sake. The Evergreens, with all those beautiful trees in the Pacific Northwest, or the Metropolitans, the last of which would have been a nod to Seattle's hockey history. So, I mean, what are they thinking out there?
I think it's great.
Anytime this team goes bad, fans are going to be saying, and people on talk shows are going to be saying, God, those guys played like they were on crack last night.
I know. It's
the Seattle crackheads. Boy, the GM must be cracked to make a stupid trade like that. Why did they do that?
You're in the minority, Bob. This has been very highly received. People like it. People love the marketing of it. They love the colors. They love the name. My only thing is, these guys better not try to throw octopi on the ice after they score a goal, because I think we've already kind of established
kind of cornered the market on that.
But a Kraken is a big octopus, so hey, they might be trying to do that. But I think it's a good name. And I think it's a good expansion team that will, mirror.
Brandon, do you understand what I'm saying about how people are going to mock this expansion team with crack?
Sure.
Do you understand that?
I don't know. Crack, I mean, people just don't use that. It's not as common, Brandon, as it was in the 80s or anything like that. No one smokes crack. They smoke meth now.
What if they?
I'm behind the times.
Okay, how about this? What if they say they're playing like a bunch of cracks? That would really be sexual.
Crackheads.
No, or cracks. Which is a slang way of calling women.
Well, they're welcoming.
Thought about that.
They're welcoming everything you can think of with the word Kraken. I mean, that's for sure. And by the way, who said this? If you can't respect our national anthem, get the hell out of this country. Only going to say what I feel. You don't protest against the flag, and you should thank God for opportunities to make a living playing a sport that you never even thought you would make a damn dollar at.
Mike That's Ditka right. said that over the
Mr.
weekend.
Mr. Ditka. No, not Mike.
But he's a far right wing.
It's Mr. to you,
anyway.
Bob. Yeah. Bob, it's Mr. to you, sir.
Right. We mentioned hockey there. I have to mention, fellas, I'm sorry, one of my boyhood heroes, Eddie Shack, who won four cups with the Leafs after refusing a trade to Detroit way back when. Eddie died over the weekend at 83. Dougie Gilmore, Leafs captain in the 90s, never obviously played with Eddie Shack, said in a tweet, and this sums up Eddie Shack, he was sad at the loss, but so happy to have known him. Quote, Eddie Shack taught me two important things. See humor in just about everything and live like a champion. Eddie Shack was one of the larger-than-life figures in the NHL when I was a boy growing up, watching him on Hockey Night in Canada on Channel 9 on Detroit. Loved the guy. And Eddie Shack is going to be missed. That's all. I wanted to say
before we get off, we got to go for another break before we get into our guest and some of the other features we do, like This Day in Sports and the Mailbag, that the opener for the Tigers is tonight, Monday night, July 27th. And think of this opener. Think of what a holiday the home opener always was with the people in the ballpark and out of the ballpark and partying all day long, and the bunting and the excitement and the intros and the celebrations and all that. Boy, to have none of it is just so strange. And also that you're going to see Michael Fulmer for the first time in nearly 2 years.
Three innings, injured. Maybe. But yeah, I want to see
that.
I want to see that.
So, and by the way, we didn't mention about the Tigers. They're on their way to another major league record. They have struck out 13, 16, and 17 times in the three games this season, which is just what's 40, wrong with it?
46 times already?
Well, let's see. It's 30 and 60, 46 times, yeah.
46, yeah. Unbelievable.
It's also worth noting that since we started...
I would say this. Go ahead, Brandon. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Brandon. What?
It's also worth noting since we started the show that the Yankees-Phillies game has been postponed because the Phillies were the host of the Marlins and COVID issues.
Well, that's what I just said. They're not coming into that clubhouse while ago. They're not going to come in there until
it's
can I talk for a second, for God's
sakes?
Go ahead. I mean, nobody's going to go in that clubhouse until somebody gives it a right-of-way of some kind that they have to clean it down, do everything you need to do to get people to accept the ballpark again. Because I don't think they'll play the rest of the week in Philly. I really don't.
I'm not sure they're going to play the rest of the season, Danny, but I'll say this about Eli's comment. You know a hell of a lot about pitching and hitters. You've been saying on this show for a while now that the pitchers are always far ahead of the hitters. So I'm seeing tweets in my account from guys who are saying, boy, look at how many times the Tigers struck out over the weekend. Trevor Bauer struck out 13-6 and a third on Sunday. But you can expect that, can't you, Denny? Because yeah, the pitchers are going to be far normally ahead of the hitters.
Yep, except for Porcello. I mean, I don't know what happened to Porcello. He's the only, I mean, he and the Japanese kid, he didn't get out of the first inning. But, you know, listen, it will always be the same. The pitchers are going to be ahead. You got to catch up to these 95, 98 mile an hour fastballs. Now they got guys out there allegedly throwing at 105, which I don't believe.
No.
But on the other hand, why would they publish 105 with no fans in the park? I'd save it for the fans in the park if they're going to cheat with the numbers.
What were you saying when we were off the air momentarily just a short time ago, or that our fans didn't hear? And that was about they're tracking now the speed of every single fastball thrown in every single Major League Baseball game.
They call it the StatCast, which measures every pitch thrown. Hitters had a batting average of .295 and a slugging percentage. Now, listen to this. Of 5.11 on fastballs traveling less than 90 miles an hour. For pitches between 90 and 92, the average was .282. And the slugging percentage was .478. When you got up to 94 to 96 range, the numbers were .262 and .428. And if a pitcher was traveling faster than 98 miles per hour, the pitch, hitters had virtually no chance. They only batted about .225, while a slugging, a measly, they say, .334. So it really does make a difference. And you know what else you don't understand is when a guy really knows how to throw a four-seam fastball, he can make that ball do things that you only can write about, because that's how good these kids can become if they learn how to throw a real four-seam fastball.
Well, so far we've seen the Phillies and now the Marlins. And, you know, the playoffs have 16 teams, but by the end of the year, there may only be two teams left. Can you imagine the Tigers making it in because they beat the virus better than everybody else, which means be mature. hey, sadly, the coronavirus has changed our world, but what hasn't changed is the opportunity to make smart financial decisions. And one of those, take advantage of dramatically low interest rates, refinance your home through David Hall Mortgage. You've seen and heard David for more than three decades in our community because he and his team have maintained leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering better options or personal attention that gives rise to lower mortgage payments and the most satisfied clients. So by refinancing now, you can probably skip up to two payments. Hall Financial has also sustained its leadership by providing the fastest service in the business. It took me less than 3 weeks to get my refi, and it's generally 3 weeks or less. Enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews for Michigan homeowners alone. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com, click on the logo, get started, or just call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention.
We're always really flattered, and we thank you sincerely for those of you, and there are a lot of you who've heard every show we've ever done. So you guys already know that Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies is a proven, highly ethical, and well-regarded expert in financial planning. Whether you own a business or you want to protect and grow your family's financial well-being, you should contact Luke. I mean, he's got a tremendous track record, as we say. Take advantage of it. Whether it's planning for future obligations like weddings, college funding, and retirement, or creating a trust to provide for those you may leave behind, let Luke Nowacki develop a comprehensive plan to account for all of it. Got decades of experience creating custom solutions for people just like you. Now, you call him, and here's the number, 248-663-4748. Set up a complimentary consultation with Luke. Ask him anything you want. It's not going to cost you anything. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Here's the number again, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through, and here Eli garbled the copy for me, ladies and gentlemen, so I don't know what they're advised. But he'll tell me later on, I'm sure. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Yeah, Stanley Edwards coming up pretty soon. You know, as we see baseball falling apart before it even begins, yesterday we saw that over the weekend, Tardif, the guy from...
the Canadian, the French
Laurent
Canadian.
Laurent Duvernay Tardif, right? Yeah. He's opted out. He's actually a doctor. You got Russell Wilson trying to play with the face shields and saying, I don't know, man, I don't think this is going to work, but I gotta try and be ready. I wonder, man, especially... My feeling has changed immediately after this Marlins news today. They may never play football this year. What do you think the chances are? I mean, it's stunning.
I agree with you. If there's one sport they're not going to play, it's going to be that one. Although every play they're spitting at each other. I mean, and there's a lot of other things going on in that game that we don't want to talk about. So they're the ones that may not have the ability to play this year.
I want to go back. I want to go back to my first grade years, if I may briefly, in arithmetic. And it seems to me that I was taught that 45, let's say, is a much larger number than 25, let's say. So if you have all the additional people in the National Football League, do you think the chances are greater that more guys are going to come down and test positive for COVID-19 than they will in baseball? We're already looking now. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is just, I don't want
to
beat it.
They had to try.
I don't
they
think
had
it's
going to try. Yeah. It's just the whole world is a debacle right now. Hey, I want to hit a couple of this day things because there's a couple of cute ones. By the way, 1928, the Yankees scored 11 runs in the 12th inning, beating the Tigers 12-1. Just a little quirk there. I did not know this.
Well, Eli, what were they telling you in the locker room after that game?
I didn't know this. Joe DiMaggio had a 61 game hitting streak in the Pacific Coast League that ended in 1933. By the way, in this day in 1970, Lou Boudreau entered the Baseball Hall of Fame 50 years ago today. The Boudreau family is Lou is gone, and so is his daughter Sharon. I guess.
Well, you weren't there for that, Danny, were you? You had a game somewhere. Were you there?
What?
When Boudreau went into the Hall of Fame,
was inducted.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was there.
It happened in August of 1970.
I got to wake you up every now and then, nudge you.
But I remember this play. Tell me if you remember this play. It happened in 1988. Pardon me. I just got back to Detroit from New York. Tommy John made three errors on one play in 12 seconds in the fourth inning. The pitching against the Brewers, John, who was 45, by the way, at the time. So Jim Gantner's on first. Jeff Leonard hits a tapper to the first base side of the mound. John bobbles for error number one. He then throws it past Don Mattingly down the right field line for error number two. The ball boy then goes to Dave Winfield. He throws it home in an attempt to nab Gantner. John cut the ball off, threw wildly to the home plate for error number three. John says, I shouldn't have thrown the ball when I first fielded it. I think there were too many negative ions in the air. My first instinct was to field the ball with two hands. Then I thought I got to field the ball with one hand. Got into the back of my hand, never should have thrown it. I shot, put it past Donnie. I threw it to the ball boy. He got out of the way, then I got it back and threw it to the Brewers trainer in the dugout.
So you want
to
hear it?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah,
let's hear it.
They'll only be able to get one if they can get that here. John bobbles the ball and should have held it. John does not normally make that kind of mistake. They're going to try to score Gantner, and Tommy John should have stayed out of the way both times, but he's in there and they'll go on and he will. Let's see. They're going to let him score.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing. Now, Danny, for you, for the younger listeners out there, who include our own producer, Brandon McAfee, why don't you tell a little story about Tommy John and Dick McAuliffe?
Well, that they had a fight in Tiger Stadium, and this had been going on for quite some time. Every time Tommy John had a chance with Dick with two strikes, a count 1-2 or 0-2, Tommy John would go headhunting, and I mean headhunting, on Dick McAuliffe. And this one Sunday afternoon, it was a little warmer than usual. Every tempers were up because everybody was warning Dick to be careful. And lo and behold, Tommy went out and whacked him again. And Dick just got on his high horse and raced out there and jumped on the top of Tommy John. And Tommy John didn't pitch anymore for the rest of the year, number one. And number two, we now know how the Tommy John surgery came into play.
Yeah, so it was 1967.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it cost you guys the pennant in 67? Because Matt got hurt too, didn't he, in that?
You know, we had a lot of guys get hurt that year, but I don't think it cost us the pennant. The thing that cost us the pennant, in all honesty, was me. I didn't pitch the last 5 weeks of the season. I tried to pitch the last game and could only go an inning. But that was, you know, that was one of those things. I got blamed for the mafia stepping on my foot. I kicked this. I did this. I did this. And it's just, none of that stuff is true.
And coming to spring training in 1968, you were behind in the rotation Earl Wilson, Mickey Lolich, I think Sparma too. I think you were forecast to maybe be the fourth or fifth starter.
Dobson. Pat Thompson.
Yeah, and then something happened. You started winning games. I don't know how you got in there. Didn't you get in because Wilson maybe took the Martin Luther King's assassination day off or something, but they put you in there and boom, the rest is history.
No. What happened was during the winter of 67, Campbell worked like hell trying to get me traded to the Minnesota Twins along with Kaline. Kaline and I were a package going to the Minnesota Twins at one time. And the trade never came off. He asked for one player too many, the Twins would later say. We wanted Zoilo Versalles at the same time in that trade. And Campbell, if he wouldn't get Zoilo, then he wasn't going to do the deal.
He's going to trade Kaline,
yeah.
too.
I want to say that. I want to say this, too. Eli and I covered American League locker rooms during that era on a daily basis, and that's home and away. I'm talking about in the 70s and into the 80s. So we knew, you know, we had a relationship with a lot of visiting players. And I'm so surprised to hear you say that about Tommy John's character as a pitcher, Denny, because you would never meet a nicer man, better with the media, better with fans than Tommy John.
You know, people they put different uniforms on when they step between the white lines. That's all I can tell you. And when a feud goes on for as long as it had between those two guys, it is what it is, you know. And you know what? It was good for the game. It really was good for the game. Everybody knew it. The fans knew it. Dick certainly knew it. And certainly Tommy John did everything he could to get him. And Dick, thank God Dick could move pretty good, because he could have been hit a lot more times.
I want to say at this point, we got to say goodbye to WCWA in Toledo. Thank you for listening down there. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, Bob, you got 5 minutes for the mailbag, then Stanley Edwards. Get going.
Wait. First of all, we would be remiss if we did not wish longtime Detroit sportscaster Jamie Samuelson, whom I really don't know well. It's been revealed that he has colon cancer. He's still a young man in his 40s. I did want to say that about him.
Yeah. Baseball players decided on this day in 1994 that they were going to strike on August 12th, and they certainly went ahead and did it. And history recorded that debacle. Go ahead. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Here's the mailbag, guys. A lot of comments and tweets on our show with Ron Cameron, mostly positive, a lot of negative. I don't think Eli wants to hear them.
No, I don't want to hear any of them. Just skip to the next topic.
You are not
going
to.
So
you can
Thank
tweet
you.
Us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. This tweet got a hell of a lot of likes on Twitter. Soft Machine even emailed it to the three of us. Hey, Eli, how was your vacation? And there was a plume of marijuana smoke coming out of the mouth of our show caricature, which amazingly, Eli Zarrett has always sworn is not key. And others on Twitter posted marijuana plants with the same thing. And Eli, how was your vacation? Jerry Ludd.
It was good. It did not go up in smoke. Go ahead.
Jerry Ludd, longtime listener, says, how much do we have to donate to your show so you can drop those 10 radio listeners in Toledo and make
your show
truly no filter? Yeah. Well, first of all, Jerry, we got 10 policemen or more alone who listen on that radio station. Denny tells us that all the time. And if you mean by truly no filter, using four-letter words is something the three of us decided from day one not to do. We were told by Drew Lane and by Brandon. It's kind of like getting an R rating on a movie instead of a PG. It can limit your audience, and we need all the listeners we can get. Longtime friend of ours and a friend of the show, well-known Detroit restaurateur Bill Roberts, emailed me a hysterical video. You've probably seen it somewhere, of a youth baseball player, left-handed hitter, stepping up to the batter's box, and he proceeds to twirl and swirl the bat all over the place for almost a minute before he steps in. MLB keeps trying to speed up the game. They want batters to step in fast. Now, in an interview with writer Bill Dow in the Free Press last week, Jim Leland said that as soon as somebody is out or gets on, he wants the on-deck player already walking briskly to the plate.
Good.
I mean, this is ridiculous. So, in answer to one of our listeners, Denny spoke on the last show about a couple of hitters who really bugged him because they took too long. I got sidetracked. Denny, I apologize. I did not ask you about what was it like to face the human rain delay, Mike Hargrove, pitch to pitch?
You mean with Cleveland?
Yep.
Texas or Cleveland, I think.
I don't have any memory of Hargrove. I mean, I know he played, but I don't think that
stepping out on every pitch, taking off his gloves,
what you don't understand, if you're playing against a guy who can pitch, you're going to take more time. You're trying to wear the pitcher down. You're trying to get him to act more quickly than normal. And, you know, it's just a part of the game. You act the way they act. That's
a
good answer. Okay. Good answer.
I'm surprised you would say that. Listener Rick Hughes makes a good point. He says, since Toronto, along with Edmonton, is one of the NHL hub cities hosting the upcoming playoffs, am I missing something here? How come the Jays can't play their games at home? Either MLB players are much more contagious than NHL players, or politicians are just playing favorites. If both leagues have acceptable COVID policies, why punish the Jays? Your thoughts?
That's a good question. I just think it's the fact that the U.S. is way behind Canada in terms of cases. They don't trust us. So that's all I got on that.
I think you're 100% right. There is no trust involved with America right now in Canada. The Canadians just aren't going to buy anything that we're selling right now.
We're doing worse than we were in April and May and June. So that's a problem.
No question.
Okay, next.
You guys can email us, asknofilter@gmail.com. And again, I always say this in the mailbag segment because it's happened a lot. Sincere praise from your colleagues is the most flattering thing anybody can get, whether you're sports commentators or whatever profession or trade you're in. Jeff DeFran, I know a lot of you know who that is. Longtime Ann Arbor. Yeah, really good guy. Longtime Ann Arbor sports talk show host and Detroit sports talk show host. Really enjoying all the podcast guests and host guys. Great job as always.
Let me give you his due. When Eli was unavailable, when we were doing the morning show together at XYT, Jeff would sit in for him when Eli wasn't available.
Nice guy. Great guy. Yeah. Been around
was
a
that
long
an,
time.
Was that an improvement, Denny? Jeff DeFran sitting in for
vast
Eli?
Vast improvements.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? Oh, unbelievable.
Unnamed texter says, ratings, baby, in response to Brandon's constant comments, the TV ratings were going to be huge when sports finally came back, and my constant rejoinders that I didn't think they would be. So far, Brandon is totally right. Ratings were very big. Brandon, you want to pat yourself on the back?
Of course.
No, I just see that as the only thing on television right now. You don't got new shows, you don't got new movies, but you got new baseball coming. So I expect as long as these games continue to be on television, they're going to get very, very high ratings. And I expect the same when the NBA and NHL come back too.
Which is this week, I think, the 30th, the NBA starts.
Yeah. I vapor locked again yesterday. I'm getting too old, I guess. I saw that the Panthers are going to play the Islanders in a noon game on Wednesday, August 8th. Is it? I thought I'm going to call a PR guy, get a press pass for that game tomorrow. That'll be fun to see. No, Bob, they're playing only in Canada.
Is the NHL allowing any fans in at all?
No.
No.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention that, Bob. By the way, the number is 76089 balls. You mentioned the fan thing. You said on the last show, why can't we sit 5 feet apart and wear masks? So what I did was I made a configuration of, let's say, 100 seats. I made 10 rows of 10. If you have to be 5 feet away, that means nobody can sit in front of you, behind you, to the left, to the right, or at an angle behind you. 100 seats will only give you about 20 people that can sit in the section. That's why some of these professional football teams are saying we're going to have 14% or 18% capacity. There's too much space with seats in all directions to have more than one out of four or five filled with a fan.
It seems to be some fans, Eli, no matter some how fans, you slice this, are going to be a lot be better. They're going up, it seems like, East Race in Denny's newest favorite sport, quote-unquote, NASCAR. Now they're doing this in soccer in Great Britain, I think. So they got you. Come on, let some fans in. And you heard me say what I said on the show the other day, that I'll go out to a restaurant down here. If you want to sit outside, you got to walk through the restaurant. I am a law-abiding citizen. I put a mask on because I must to walk through the restaurant, then go outside. You put a mask on when you enter these games. When you get to your seat, your mask off.
Well, hopefully that happens, but there may not be any seasons anyway. Did you give the number? Can we move on? 76.
You just gave
balls?
The number. I only got a couple brief things here.
Because we're due to call Stanley right now.
I understand so that, but wonderful segue. I got two brief things here. One is going to involve you, so be prepared to talk a little bit. First of all, thank you to Rob from Madison Heights for writing in. Says he downloads our show as soon as it comes out, listens to us at work. Sometimes he says some episodes I listen to twice. He suggests Bob Uecker as a guest for the show. Hell yeah, but I don't know. You get into some of these guys who are much older, you don't know if Bob Uecker is still Bob Uecker. Denny, you might know more about that than I.
I'm trying to remember the last time I saw him at a show, sometime last summer. And I just don't remember if he was still sharp. I just don't.
I'll take 50% of Bob Uecker. It would be hilarious.
Yeah,
you're probably right about that. We should get on the horn. And
I'll
then
call him.
Good. Thank you. Eli's and my mutual friend Bill Collins just this morning sent us both an email saying that Axios.com is out with its ranking of the best all-time teams in the entire history of the NBA. The Detroit Pistons check in at number 7. That's pretty good, Eli.
That's pretty good, but check it out. The roster they had, though, puts Dave Bing on the bench. It's got Isaiah Dumars, Grant Hill, Ben Wallace, and Bob Lanier as the all-time starting five, with the bench being Laimbeer, Chauncey Billups, Dave Bing, Rip Hamilton, Larry Faust. That's a good one. Who the heck is Larry Faust? Played from 50 to 57.
Well, that's the Fort Wayne. That's the Fort.
Yeah, they weren't even here till 50. So Bailey Howell was great, and Andre Drummond. Okay, how about it? Yeah. Ready to call Stanley?
And then I would just say this. I'm going to take Zeke over Dave Bing. I'm going to take Dave Bing over Joe Dumars.
I might do that. That's worthy of discussion.
All right, call Stanley Edwards.
You got it. Let's get him on. The 1980 Wolverines were in trouble. In 79, they finished just 8-4, including, of all things, a loss to unranked North Carolina in the Gator Bowl. Just as ominously, they started 80 by barely beating Northwestern, then losing to Notre Dame in a last-second 51-yard game-winning Harry Oliver field goal, some you may remember, then fell 17.
Was there!
70 at home to South Carolina and Heisman winner George Rogers. But reeling at 1-2, they ran the table, including three straight shutouts, the last of which a 26-0 rout at Purdue, paced by, yes, the fullback, Stanley Edwards.
Two tight ends in a balanced line. Rick's deep and Edwards close. Underneath center is Wangler. At quarterback, it is a seven-man front. There is a hand up to Edwards. And it is! There it is! Big old Edwards pulls in Michigan's first touchdown of 1980 against Purdue. It is Stan Edwards' seventh touchdown of 1980 and Stan Edwards' 14th touchdown in his career. He's a junior. He has one more year.
Ran for 100.
God, I miss old man Eufor. God, I loved old man Eufor.
Anyway, Stan and the company followed up by beating Ohio State 9-3, then Washington 23-6 in the Rose Bowl. Bo's first Rose Bowl win after losing his five previous attempts. And Stanley joins us now. And I imagine, I hope Bo gave you a big hug after that game, Stan. How are you? And I suppose that brings back some memories, doesn't it?
It does bring back some memories. It's fun. Ironically, the 1980 team is meeting in a couple of days down in Ohio. We have a reunion, a 40-year reunion, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
So it does bring back memories. I had some great teammates with some great times.
Can I follow that up with one more thing, please, Danny, before we're going
to
be
– ask him who he's looking forward to seeing the most.
Can I please ask him a follow-up question on that 80 team?
Yep.
You seem to think and it was amazing what you guys did after that. After three games, remind us, Bo dumped the offense. That was the end of the option. He exchanged John Wangler for Rich Hewlett. You guys went on crazy, won the next nine games, and you claim that is the best offensive in Michigan's history and even better than the 1997 team. You told me that 20 years ago. I assume you still believe that.
It's not even close from the offense. The 1997 team had a tremendous defense, and they were probably on par with our defense. We shut out the last 20 quarters, if I'm not mistaken.
22.
We didn't score 22, I don't know, and I would not go out and say that our defense was better than the 97 defense. They obviously had the Heisman Trophy winner. We had some real good players on our team, too, So relative to their defense, they were probably a notch above ours. Offense, it wasn't close.
Let me ask you, I'm going to bring you into 2020 as of this moment. I've had this position in the beginning that the NFL was going to play no matter what this year. Now I'm less than 50% sure they're going to even get the ball off the ground this year. How can they play with all the spit and the perspiration and all the other crazy things that go on every play of every NFL game?
How can you make a kid sign a waiver and put his health at risk and not pay him?
I agree.
He brings it right back to the college. Good for you, Stanley.
Yep. So there is some inherent risk there. There is a true belief that young people fare well with COVID-19. I guess the data will spell that out. But I just don't know. At some point, you got to start thinking about the athletes. This is why there needs to be some entity, whether it's called a union, whether it's called an organization, whether it's called something. Nobody has a voice for the players but the parents. And if one player decides to hold their kid out and they were maybe a contributor, they'll get blackballed and they'll get away with it. And that's what I don't like about what college football has always stood for.
Would you let your son play?
I don't know. I don't know enough. I do have a son in college now anyway, that's going to play. So I'm still trying to learn. They're supposed to report in a couple weeks. And I told him he may not go. But what I'm going to do is try to learn more about that and see what's going on.
Did you see, by the way, the Real Sports, if you haven't watched it, because Chris Hinton, who was a great... You saw that, okay, because he's an incredibly bright and accomplished man, knows more about football. His wife is a retired lawyer, and they're very, very concerned. He says there's going to be at some point a child's going to get hospitalized or worse. They're very, very scared. They say pump the brakes. Chris Hinton says that these players are all brought back in June. Like you said, Stanley, they have no protections. There's no union. They have no choice. Either drop out or come back and face the risks.
You know, so I have in my home now, you know, I have four kids, all but one has come back home from between the age of 19 and 25, and it's three of them. And so when they go out in general public, you know, I ask them to be careful, not for their sake, it's just for mom and I's sake.
Sure.
So again, young people may be okay. We don't know that because all it takes is one to get this virus. And then it doesn't end well. So when that happens, we'll see. But as a parent, I'm skeptical, but I'm trying to learn everything before I just make an emotional decision. And the reason why I say that is, I mean, my son who's playing at Saginaw Valley, he's not a pro.
Right.
But he enjoys the college experience. And I don't want him or any other kid in the college football to get blackballed because they decide and their parents decide that their health was more important. And that's what happened. And the Big Ten, the SEC, and the NCAA have never protected college athletes that way. They've let coaches run roughshod with their programs and run kids out of there. And no one can ever hold those guys accountable.
You're talking about your family and your kids. And the one name that nobody's broached on this show is Braylon Edwards, a great wide receiver. When we spoke on the phone yesterday, I was a little surprised when you told me you did not listen to our show. You didn't know about it, I guess. When Braylon was on, you guys have had a checkered relationship that's been well-documented. What is the status of that relationship now?
No, we've never had a checkered relationship. What we've allowed is people to assume what they wanted to assume. Braylon does so many things now, he doesn't tell me all the time. That's just kind of how it is. He's kind of a popular guy. And he'd be on the phone with me all day trying to say, I heard from this guy, I heard from that guy. Braylon's relationship and I have never been checked. We've always been.
He was very critical the way you raised him, Stan.
Absolutely. Let me jump in. And he was right. He was right. I never said he was wrong.
Wait a second.
And the other three, I did a little bit differently. Looking back on it, I didn't have to. I was not Tom Marinovich. Let's get that straight.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Marinovich. But looking back on it, there are some things I could have not been so hard on Braylon as. And he could have still been the third player taken in the draft because that's how he was wired. You know, I was so afraid of him not being successful. You know, it was eat, sleep, and drink with that. He wanted it now. Don't get me wrong. He didn't go join a rock band after everything was over with, you know, but he wanted it. But there was a lot of lessons for me to learn as well.
And I must say, in fairness, he came on our show and in the book, we all read the book that he wrote. And he basically said, look, you know, my dad was tough on me, but I love my dad. I was a product of a divorce and it took me some time to realize that he had my best interests in mind. So, you know, what you said before is a little more interesting. And that is that Braylon never had said that the relationship was bad. People inferred that from I don't know what. But it's interesting that you say that you could have been a little easier on him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you at one time, really on a radio show, you went out of, I don't know if you went out of your way, but you really defended him on that radio show with one of the stations in town too. You got into a pretty good fiery little exchange there.
Well, I don't know if I defended Braylon, if I defended Berkeley. I don't remember either. And that has a lot to do with, you know, with 54 blasts, me running to linebackers for about 20 years. So I don't remember everything, but I've never been publicly critical of him. None of my kids are angels, and nobody in my listening voice kids are angels either. So that's just how it goes. So I have never had an issue with Braylon publicly. Has he always done what I wanted him to do? Probably not. Just like kids do. They sometimes do things on their own. They got other influences in their life. You try to support them, and sometimes things get out. So when I hear this and when I read the book, I laughed so hard when I read that book. I laughed.
Which part? So hard. What was so funny? What was funny?
That he was comfortable enough letting the world know how hard I was on him. I thought he would, in his mind, try to protect me in that regard. I could care less what people think about what I did. I have no problem telling you that I would have done it differently. And I think about it now, you know, but he and I laugh about that to this day. When he was reading that, not one time did I get a little, there's a couple of things that he embellished in there, and I'm not going to say where it is, that I thought was funny. But that, he sold a couple of copies, I suppose.
Hey, Stan, these issues aside, did you have any issues with this now disgraced late Michigan team physician? What do you make of this sex scandal in Ann Arbor? What did you know about it?
Well, everybody knew about it. I chose to remain on the sideline only because I just don't want to get involved in any of that. But it's nothing new. Everybody who played and worked in Ann Arbor knew. And if they say anything different, they're lying. And that's on them. Now, if they want to say it under oath and fit, that's on them. But everybody.
Did he molest you?
Next question.
Okay. I understand that. I respect that.
Let me follow.
You've already followed.
Go ahead.
All right. Who was tougher with you? College coaches, Bo, in his recruiting process at that time? Or the NFL? Who was a tougher crew to get along with?
Oh, it's much easier to get along in the NFL.
It is.
They don't get really close to you in the NFL, and you have a lot more leverage because you do have a union. Bo was extremely hard, but Bo was, to a degree, organized and somewhat fair. He wasn't the fairest guy in the world. He did a lot of stuff that, looking back on it, he should not have done.
Yeah.
You know. He liked us. He always told us, hey, if you're going to play, you know, you got to practice and all that. There was a time Rick Leach got hurt. Beginning week in practice, didn't practice the entire week. Stacy Johnson ran the first offense that week. In the game, Stacy Johnson didn't touch the field. Bo was totally wrong about that. Mm-hmm. And he lied to us about that.
Now,
when you coach for 21 years and you coach 800 some odd guys and you have so many different teams, you're not going to be perfect. Yeah. You're not.
You had every right not to answer the question. Bob asked it in a professional way. You had every right not to ask it, but you said next question. So here is the next question.
Got it.
Bo knew what Anderson was doing because Bo hired him after he was fired by the health service. So he knew. Do you believe that Bo just thought it was actually part of an exam? Or, as other Wolverines have told me from back in your era, Bo liked Anderson because he would get guys ready to play that Lindsey McLean would not let play. So guys that had injuries, Anderson would okay him. So did Bo just think this was a routine part of an exam, or was he complicit? What do you think?
I don't think he was complicit. I don't think, and I can't say that. I don't know what really? He, I really don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I can't let my emotions give you an answer that I don't have facts for. I just don't, you know. What I do know, but and I'm not trying to get away from your question. The relationship between Bo, Lindsey McLean, the head trainer, and Dr. Anderson was very, very different, you know, because Lindsey McLean would never put an athlete's health in danger. I mean, I've seen Bo yell at him all the time because the guy's not ready to play or practice. And Lindsey's like, he can't play, Bo. He just can't. And Lindsey would do his job. But what Bo knew and was complicit, I don't know. And if you had, and if you put a gun in my head, I'd like to think, I'm not sure how much he knew that it actually went on in the exam room. So it's difficult for me to say that.
But do you agree that Anderson was more lenient and would approve guys to play that Lindsey McLean wouldn't? And that was one of the reasons that Bo liked to having him around?
So let me be honest. As a player, I don't pay attention of what a doctor says about another player. Uh-huh. When I was physically hurt, ironically, I was physically hurt. And so if I can't run, Dr. Anderson can say whatever he wants to say. I can't run, you know, so that didn't make a difference. The only time that I probably should not have played that had Dr. Anderson said he's not able to play, I was going to play anyway. And I did play anyway. And it was that 9-3 victory to against Ohio State. In the previous game, you talked
about— because you broke a collarbone. You broke your collarbone against
Absolutely. Purdue. I broke my collarbone in the game before that. And they, Gerald Ingram, the other fullback, he should have played the entire game. I had no business playing in that game. They shot me up. They get me a brace. And I couldn't raise my left arm at all. Bo just trusted me that I was not going to make a mistake, that I could play in a big game. And you'll get that. I was no good out there to anybody. I didn't hurt the team. I damn sure didn't help. You know, Gerald Ingram should have played that game.
I don't want to put a gun to your head, and I would never do that. I don't believe in guns to start with, but it almost sounds like a secret society with the doctor and not telling him and Bo not knowing. I mean, it almost sounds like a secret society in there.
Always. Yeah. Always. Because that's where college athletics, football for sure, was in those days.
It's unbelievable.
You had no place else to go. What were you going to do?
Yeah.
Coaches called other coaches and blackball players, which they probably still do to this day, but you had no place. There's a lot more riding on the reputation of your school, and social media has created a platform where people can kind of make maneuvers and drive big players and to where they realize they got some kind of power away from your school. So you don't get that as much, I got to believe. I'm guessing to a degree. But back in those days, I know players who tried to go to other places. And somebody from Ann Arbor called them and say, don't touch him.
Well, you know, Stan,
right or wrong for doing it? I don't know.
I'm listening to all this stuff. You played at Detroit Kettering, which unfortunately no longer exists. You could have gone anywhere you wanted to. A, you don't sound like a Bo fan. B, do you regret your time at Michigan going there? And would you now, in retrospect, have gone someplace else?
A, I'm a huge Bo fan.
Okay.
B, I should have went someplace else.
Wow.
I should have went to UCLA or Texas. Those are the other places I would have gone because I would have been a better player. I'd have been a better player. Yeah.
Now, why do you say that? What do you mean you would have been a better player?
Because their scheme fit what I really wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
You know, the point of me moving from tailback to fullback, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I didn't have a problem with that. But I would have been a better player if I'd have went to a more of a wide open offense. I mean, even when I was playing tailback, they used to tell you how to run. You can't tell a running back how to run.
Yeah.
You can't do that, particularly if you've never played the position.
Yeah, you
had I gone to those other schools, I'd been a better player. I'm a huge Bo Schembechler fan. Please don't forget that. Huge fan of his.
Let me change directions here for a minute. We can get back to anything else. But so you played 9 tough years, 4 at Michigan, 5 with the Houston Oilers. You put your body through all that. You wind up the final year of your career with the Detroit Lions. I was in New York that year in 87, so I wasn't there to see you. But listen to the running backs the Lions had the year you were there. You ready, guys? James Jones, Gary James, Gary Ellerson, Carl Bernard, Cleve Wester, Stan Edwards, and even Butch Wolfolk came along to play for that team briefly. What was that like, you and Wolfolk in the miserable Darryl Rogers era? Was a Spartan guy you played against?
There's another guy on the roster who's a dear friend of mine. We're actually going into business together. Scott Williams, who's on that team too, from Georgia. Darryl Rogers, one of the biggest assholes to ever play to coach in college football.
Thank you.
Never should have been a coach of the Lions. He never should have been a coach at Michigan State. He understood the passing game, but he was an asshole.
But just because he beat Michigan?
Not for him. No. Not for him. I'm actually probably going to Michigan State because I was a Levi Jackson fan. Levi grew up in my neighborhood. And
Detroit
I
Kettering.
Idolized him.
Yeah.
I idolized Levi. And I was going to Michigan State until Levi, going into his senior year, Darryl Rogers become head coach, if I got the numbers right. He goes from tailback to fullback. Rick Bayes goes to tailback. Levi was close to becoming the Michigan State's all-time leading rusher and didn't get it. Michigan played Michigan State in Ann Arbor my senior year, which was Levi's senior year. He come out the locker room. He said, if you think anything about me, you will not go to Michigan State. That's why I didn't go.
What coach made the biggest impression on you in your life, both on and off the field?
It's between both. It's two. Bo Schembechler and Bob Jones, my high school coach.
Yeah, okay. I knew Bob.
Yeah, my high school coach. Those guys mold me and to being the person that I am today, without a doubt, those two. Coaches I had in pros, I was in Houston 6 years. I had 5 head coaches. I never got close to any of them dudes.
Yeah.
It was a revolving door.
a coach that you really admired was Bill McCartney, because you pointed out that in the 1980 season, and it's really stunning, Michigan had consecutive shutouts, 22 consecutive quarters with no touchdowns and no points. And you said he was the first to institute the six defensive back situation, and you guys shut down Mark Herman, who set all kinds of NCAA records in that game. So McCartney, in your view, was a genius.
Not only was he a genius, he's a dear friend. He recruited me. He one of the reasons that I did come to Michigan, because when I shut Michigan State down, I started looking at other schools. I was lukewarm to Michigan. Mm-hmm. I was just lukewarm to him. But when Bill McCartney became to recruit me, a genuine, loving man, I dig him. I dig mm-hmm. him to death. He introduced the dime package to college football. Yeah. It took Mark Herman probably two or three series to realize we had six defensive backs.
He only rushed three guys. I know. That was a great season.
So we're talking about all the stuff that happened in Michigan, and I'm thinking to myself, you should have your own talk show somewhere, Stanley. But I want to ask you about what's going on.
He wants to make a real living.
I want to ask you what's going on at Michigan now. People are so down on the program. They're so down on Harbaugh. As you saw over the weekend, under his nose, the number one defensive tackle in America at the high school level from Belleville decided to go to Alabama. What the hell is going on at your alma mater?
Yeah, I don't know what's about that. Now, the whole recruiting, and I hear things, but I'm not a guy to just hop on the bandwagon of hearsay and rumors. So I'm not really sure what happened. I don't know the kid. You know, my kids are out of high school, so I don't really follow the high school scene as much. But yeah, D tackles, run stoppers don't grow on trees.
But I mean, it's just Harbaugh and generally what's going on there. People are down. They're not happy. This is not the Michigan we knew.
He's got to win championships.
Yeah, he's got to win Ohio championships.
I've been told that his marching orders are to graduate players, stay scandal free.
Mm-hmm. Well, then Bo's rolling over in his grave because beating Ohio State should be one of
those. I was told by a pretty prominent person. To be very clear on what I'm saying, I'm not suggesting Harbaugh is okay with that. I'm absolutely sure he wants to win football games. But for me, when you talk schematics and on the field and all that, I think they're finally starting to get it. This is a pet peeve of mine. And everybody's going to think it's because of my kids. You don't have a great football team in college football unless you got good team speed. Got to be able to run. They haven't had good team speed in that team, in that school, for about 10 years now. It seems like speed is important. Every team that plays in the national championship game, or at least gets into the playoffs, they got really good team speed. Their skilled players can absolutely run. Because, and I always knew that, but Urban Meyer put it in very succinct terms for me last season when he was doing commentating. He said, you have to have people that can break the game open in one play or not. Because you're going to get 8 to 10 offensive plays a game. You're asking kids to be focused and not make mistakes for 8 to 10 plays, for 8 to 10 drives. It's not going to happen. Somebody's going to jump off sides. You're going to have a missed assignment. It's going to happen. You're starting over again. You're not going to be able to hold the ball for 8 to 10 plays per drive and not make mistakes. You need somebody who can get it, go to the house, next.
Did Michigan make a mistake in hiring Jim Harbaugh?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think Michigan really – see, the problem in Ann Arbor is I don't know what the number is over here. We want a Michigan man. I don't know what the number is over here. I want my guy. I don't know what the number is up here. We want somebody who we control. There's a whole lot of stuff in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there always have been. And the school and the landscape of college football was never able to affect it early on. But now kids are getting ready because there's so many other TV outlets. Good players are going to smaller schools or going away from home, and they're getting a chance to get exposure. So therefore, it's not the Big Two and Little Eight anymore. Kids are going other places. So where you had your pick of the elite players in the state and a lot of times in the nation, that's not there anymore. Kids who are seniors and juniors in high school now, how old were they when Michigan won their last championship?
Right. So if he doesn't beat Ohio State this year, presuming there is a season, is Harbaugh gone? And how much longer can he survive?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
You know, so when you guys won the Rose Bowl in 1980, not to go back to that, but Bo had been 0-7 in bowl games. He had lost 5 Rose Bowls. You throw in an Orange and a Gator loss in there. And yet he's viewed as the greatest coach in Michigan history. So I guess my question to bring it to today is, was the flow of talent and speed and recruiting already gone to Ohio State? And Harbaugh is now forced to try and overcome that? Or is he partially responsible for the fact that Ohio State is now so dominant, it's hard to picture Michigan ever overcoming them in the near future?
So let me go back to the bowl scenario you just played out. So Ohio State was never faster than us when we played. I had Anthony Carter. I had Butch Wolfolk, a world-class sprinter. I had Tony Jackson. We had a lot of guys that were 4-4 or better. We had a lot of guys. So let me share with you the difference between the 1977-78 Rose Bowl team and the 1980-81 Rose Bowl team. I started the game in 1978 Rose Bowl as a true freshman, and I was excited to play. It was, again, the Big Two, the Little Eight. We got to Pasadena, California, 3 weeks before the game. We practiced twice a day for 2 weeks. We had two-a-days. For one game, when game week came around and I knew I was solidified as a starter, one of the few freshmen ever started in Big Ten history in the Rose Bowl, I was ready to come home 4 days before the game. I said, let's get this game. I was tired. I was beaten. I was tired. And I didn't care. We were beat up. This is why I dig Bo Schembechler. And like I said before, it's funny how some people will listen to this and they'll hear something different.
Sure.
Is what he did before the beginning of that season and changed the whole offense in 1980 without practicing and having spring ball, and what he did going out to the Rose Bowl. We went there. We went out there 10 days before the game. We never had two-a-days. Curfew was later. When the game came around, we were ready to hit it, buddy. We were ready to play. We had a good team, and we were ready to play. We should have beat them worse than we did. It should have been like 35-0, quite frankly. The point of it is that Bo get criticized a lot, but he has shown to me and to a lot of other people, he's not going to beat his head against the wall, but for too long. Yeah. When he needs to make a change, he will change. And he, as stubborn as he is, Lloyd Carr is 10 times stubborn than Bo Schembechler will ever
really?
Be.
Really? No kidding.
Ever. Ever.
God. Boy, is that hard to believe.
He gave
that
Braylon really number one. Oh, that's too funny.
Did anybody come? Why didn't you coach someplace? Anybody come to you and say, hey, we want you to be our next head coach?
Because when you coach football at that level, you can't be a good father and husband and dad.
Oh,
you're gone all the time. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So, Stan, you've lived in our mutual hometown of Detroit all these years since you left football. On behalf of Brandon, who is also a Detroit native, what the hell is wrong with the local effing Lions, our NFL franchise?
That's not
all
fair.
These years.
You know what? Again, like I said earlier, I don't listen to rumors and innuendos and how fans and the people in the sports market talking about how the Lions are jinxed. I'm not so sure I don't fall in that category anymore. It's like, at some point, you got to get it right.
Yeah.
At some point. I was disappointed when they got rid of Jim Caldwell, and not for obvious reasons. He's a good coach. Yeah. And so I was a little bit disappointed. I think Matt Patricia is a good coach. I think there's some part of his players play for him. Matt Patricia's players play for him. I think the nuance of the communication and becoming a head coach, he's still learning. But when he puts a team out on the field, they're not out of place. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They're a bit outmanned because they don't have the players that some of the other team players. So what's going on with the Lions? I don't know that the Ford family really understands who is an architect to help build a team, not only from a coaching standpoint, it's from a general manager and president standpoint. I met Mr. Wood. Mr. Wood, who's the president, I don't know what he knows about football. I have no idea. He may know more, 10 times more than I do, but he doesn't seem like he comes from a football background. When Matt Millen got hired, I heard on who am I talking to was on WDFN? Raise your hand before.
I was on WDFN at one point.
Not I.
I listened to Bill Ford Jr., who I met, who I don't consider him a friend because I don't know him that well, but a good man. When he had hired Matt Millen, the question came to him about how'd you hire somebody with no experience?
I know what he said.
He said, quote, people I know say he's one of the smartest people in the game.
No, he said he's a man of towering intelligence. I was there that day when they introduced him. He says Matt Millen is a man of I'd never heard that term, towering intelligence.
Well, he may have been a man and be a laughingstock GM at the same time. They're not mutually antithetical. Well,
but hold on now. It's less about Matt Millen being a guy who's never been a general manager before. Because if you look at what's Lynch's first name for the 49ers?
John Lynch.
John Lynch knows what the hell he's doing. He knows how to build a football team. He had never been a general manager before, but he knows what he's doing. So it's less about does that guy have experience? It's more about do you know what's sitting across from you? And he's giving you the blueprint of a program that he's going to build, and it's going to work.
You know,
most billion-dollar owners can't decipher that.
I've said it many times. It's so simple, but it's the truth. You need a genius somewhere in the organization, either the general manager, the coach, or the owner has to just see how the pieces fit together and what makes a winning organization. They have not, whether it's a Bill Belichick or even a Jerry Jones, it could be an owner, somebody really has a feel for all of it and has a sense of who can lead, who can play, and that's where winning organizations come from, and they've never had anybody, owner, coach, or general manager that's been able to take charge and be that ingenious person that sees how it all fits together.
Yeah. Hey, Stan, I talked
to a lot of other players, and they swear up and down, you know, guys get on the text and you meet them at the local pub and former Lion players. They don't know what they're doing. Half these guys don't know what they would do either. That's not a simple job, and it's not easy. So you just don't walk in there and think you can pick players up and all of a sudden win. It's not that easy. But the fact of the matter is you as an owner have to understand four pillars for me: communication, culture, identifying talent, player development. You get those four pillars in place, you're going to stand a chance to be competitive every year.
You certainly implied that Patricia is still on a learning curve. Why would you bring a guy in on a learning curve? Why won't you bring in the big guys? I mean, they've got more money than God here.
Because all these owners are the flavor of the month. If you look at John McVay, you look at LaFleur in Green Bay, you look at Shanahan and like that, bring in the new young hot coach, and I can duplicate what the other new young hot coaches did before. That's all. Yeah. It's just too easy. That's the easy way for them to figure it out.
Bob, last question. Go ahead.
Hey, it's one more thing for me, Stan. I want to know if you're capable of discussing baseball, hockey, and basketball as articulately as you've just discussed football, if you're just as opinionated about the sports, because the next time another of us goes on vacation, you just pass the audition, buddy.
Jeez.
Hey, no, the question is can you convince Carolyn Edwards how much you're going to pay me to do that?
There you go. End of story here.
Stanley,
great talking to you again. Good seeing
you.
Great insights. Really appreciate you.
I've known all you guys for at least 40 years. That's a long time.
Yes, sir, you have. I know. Good to talk to you. Good to see you.
Take care,
guys.
Thanks, Stan. You're great.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. Yeah, it was great talking to him again.
You know, it's a mixed bag, folks. Some guys you get on, you think they're going to be great guests, and they disappoint you a little bit. Some guys, you're not sure what to expect, though we've known Stan 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
He might have been the best guest we've ever had on the history of this program.
Oh,
and
please.
That's saying a lot.
Stop it now. You have
said that about Izzo. You said that about Spindler.
Every time they just get off.
All right, anyway.
Brandon, was that the greatest guest we ever had in the history of this program?
We might as well quit the show right now. I've had the greatest guest, so we obviously
the greatest. We're done.
It's been great talking to you, folks.
To the History Hall of Fame.
Enjoy the rest of your lives. And we'll see you again Thursday, okay? Johnny Mengel, the former Piston from the 70s, will be our guest then.
Crash.
So long.
Everybody have a good week. Stay safe, guys.